Broadcasting from the secret military base in Summit Township. This is On the Docket with Luke Moorhead.
Who do you think you are?
Weekdays at noon on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM. Presented by Knutson Sporting Goods, your outdoor convenience store. Kettlebell Hotspot, where your functional fitness begins. Bud Light, Bella Notte Ristorante, and Tri-County Water. That's good water.
Welcome to On the Docket with Luke Moorhead II filling in for Connor Dockery on a Monday afternoon. If you're wondering where Connor is, if you have not already, haven't already heard on maybe over on WKHM some talk back Jackson, Connor Dockery making a special appearance as he is out with Captain Steve at the Jackson Country Club at the Jackson County Chamber of Commerce golf outing today. So he and Steve will be representing McKibben Media Group, hopefully having a good round of golf, but most importantly, a good amount of fun out there. Not necessarily the most competitive, serious thing in the world, the Jackson County Chamber golf outing. Although I will say this, it's better that they are doing the golfing than me. If I should probably pitch this to the sales team here, but if there's ever a client that is in need of a pick-me-up and they need to feel better about their golf game, just have them shoot nine holes with me and they'll feel pretty good about where their golf game is at. And then maybe, you know, nine holes is all that you really need. With 18, you might want to have a doctor on standby because that is definitely going well over 4 hours as far as the golfing session goes. But either way, I'm filling in for Connor on the show this afternoon. For the next hour, we'll go over some sports happenings, obviously, here on the docket. And if you've heard me before, I do yap about sports for an hour per week over on Saturday mornings over on WKHM with Sports Saturday with Luke Moorhead. So I do have a little bit of, you know, if in case you haven't heard, I do a little bit of yapping on the air about sports. And I'm a bad news first kind of guy. We got some pretty the way that the Pistons played last night. I'm just going to get right into it. That was bad. That was a car crash in slow motion for the Detroit Pistons. And again, if you're not a frequent listener of Sports Saturday, which I don't necessarily blame you, if I wasn't working, I don't know if I'd get up all that early on Saturday mornings either. But there's a sound, but there's a little sound bit that I play on my show every now and then that I'm trying to find here. I know this is fantastic radio here, but here it is. I play this sound a good decent bit.
Are you from Ohio or something?
The answer is yes. So I've been keeping my eye on both the Pistons and the Cavs all season long for both of these squads. And I said that I thought the matchup was fairly even on paper, and the way the series went, that's kind of how it went, because obviously the series going seven games, that tends to seem like it's fairly, you know, two teams of, you know, fairly equal fortitude going against each other. But watching that game seven, I'm not really sure how much of it was the Cavs necessarily having that good of a game and how much of it was just the Pistons, for whatever reason, a game seven at home, not really showing up with their best, especially early on, and the Pistons not really being able to quite recover from that. Seeing as usually with games like this, I wouldn't even bother playing highlights because I'm not necessarily sure anybody listening would want to hear them given the result and the outcome of the game. And now for the Pistons, their season comes to an end, and we'll get into the ramifications of what that means for the Pistons moving forward and how they can approach this offseason to try to do bigger and better things next season. And also acknowledging that this season, even though off of the heel of that game, everything seems as bad as possible, there were some positives to take away, but there are still some questions to answer. But again, in the first quarter, early on, the Pistons kept it close until around the end. You had Caris LeVert with making some impact. Here's the radio call from the broadcast from last night.
Pistons knock it away. Caris LeVert knocks it away, gets to the basket, lays it in.
Timeout, Cleveland.
We are tied at 13.
Timeout, Cleveland.
That was about as positive as it got for the Pistons in that one, tying the game at 13. Late in the first quarter, they would kind of have a lead slip, and then obviously Donovan Mitchell would hit a ridiculous bank shot buzzer beater to end the first quarter. That's kind of the way it went for the Pistons. And I guess, again, just for posterity's sake and just because it feels like it would be a little bit silly to at least not play it, here's the final call for the Detroit Pistons 2025-2026 season for the NBA, ending in Game 7 of the second round of the NBA playoffs.
Sasser topside misses a three. Bryant with a rebound. Porter Jr. forecourt to Ellis. And with 7.4 seconds left, Cavaliers will slow down and take the win. They have stunned the Pistons here in Game 7, 125-94.
125-94, the final score. Stunned is, I guess that's a fairly good way to put it, where, again, Cleveland just kind of came out, and the Pistons, I'm not necessarily, if this is on I don't necessarily want to blame coaches for players not necessarily having their best game, but you feel like they'd at least come out with a little bit more fire. J.B. Bickerstaff, known for being a fairly good motivator, that's something that was actually was very much lauded for during the regular season, where the Pistons were dealing with a ton of injuries. And, you know, in the regular season in general, we've seen some teams just kind of lollygag throughout the year. J.B. Bickerstaff and this Pistons team never really did that. On their way to a 60-win regular season. But in this game, they didn't really have the juice. And I feel like, you know, obviously with both teams during the series, the Cavs early on and then the Pistons later on in the series, raising issues about some of the officiating, I do feel like there were some bad calls that went against the Pistons in this Game 7. I do feel like throughout the entire season, the entire series, James Harden kind of flopping around like a fish out of water out there. I will say James Harden played with absolutely no shame in terms of foul baiting and all of that. But I do feel like this kind of game is not just hand waved and explained away by, oh, the refs were bad. This was, you know, this game, it feels like it would have been well out of hand regardless. And again, it's a 31-point loss at home on a Game 7. There needs to be some kind of... It does feel like there needs to be some kind of response, because at the end of that game, the Boo Birds weren't even out, right? All the Boo Birds left, too, because I think sometimes, you know, you boo your team, you're thinking, okay, well, if we boo them now, they'll reflect on it and they'll come back, you know, more motivated. But when it's Game 7, there's no more games to play afterwards. What's the point of sticking around even to boo the team? So they left, too. By the end of that fourth quarter. And again, the questions that kind of linger. First off, Jalen Duren. He had one fairly good game in Game 6 where he got 15 points and 11 boards. That was kind of more of what we were used to seeing out of Jalen Duren from the regular season for the Pistons. But that is one solid game. They played seven games this year. That's 14. So 13 out of 14 games for Jalen Duren in this postseason were varying degrees of disappointing, from, man, that wasn't that good of a game from him, on all the way up into oh my goodness, he was a disaster on the court multiple times this series and in the season in general in the postseason. Jalen Duren for this contest had 7 points in 26 minutes, went 3 for 7, and went 1 for 2 from the free throw line. I forget if it was in the third or fourth quarter, but there was a spot where he just missed a wide open layup. And at that point, you might might as well just take him out of the game. I'm not even sure why he even got the 26 minutes that he did get. And in lieu of Jalen Duren being a reliable second option or even an option at all for this Pistons team in the postseason, most of the time Tobias Harris was able to step up and contribute. I think he had like a decent streak of like 20-point games going for him in the postseason. Tobias Harris did not make a single field goal for the Pistons. Did not make a single field goal. Went 0-for-6 shooting. The 5 points he got all came from the free throw line. Went 5-for-6, so I guess he was decent from the charity stripe, but still. 5 boards, 2 assists. He got 23 minutes. You know, not making a single field goal. Even if Tobias Harris wasn't forced into the role of being the second option because Jalen Duren spent the entire postseason really watching his Supermax rookie extension slip away. I'm not sure if you're the Pistons how you can justify giving him that. I guess the only way that you can is if you think that this postseason was bad in a fluke kind of way. Like, hey, we're still with you for the long term. I do get the fear that, you know, with these sports leagues, all these teams, they like reclamation projects, right? If they see, a lot of great potential was seen with Jalen Duren during the course of the regular season. So if the Pistons don't give him the long-term contract, maybe a bit more of a desperate organization will come in and say, hey, we think we can fix you up and we can get the best out of you for a playoff run. And so we'll give it to you. And so the Pistons might be worried about losing him there. But then I do feel like if you don't give all that money and all that, this huge extension to Jalen Duren, sure, that does leave a hole for you to fill, but then you have all of that space, that all of that cash you're going to use for Jalen Duren to go and put it in some other investment, maybe like a trade with like a Lauri Markkanen or something, where it feels like, I don't know how you can watch those past 14 postseason games of Jalen Duren playing and justify giving him everything in the world that he ever wants as far as organizationally and giving him this big contract. I'm not necessarily sure you can justify giving Jalen Duren a Cade Cunningham type of contract extension, given the production he had in the postseason. And speaking of a Cade Cunningham contract extension, Cade Cunningham was just fairly non-existent, especially in the second half for this one. He had 13 points, only had 2 points in the second half altogether, went 5 of 16, 0-for-7 from beyond the arc. And this is kind of where one of the Pistons' weaknesses kind of glared its ugly head with the shooting has been hot and cold, but one of the overall weaknesses that people look at with this Pistons roster is that there's just not a lot of consistent, reliable three-point shooting, maybe beyond Duncan Robinson, who had a decent night from beyond the arc. But besides that, Cade Cunningham, he's most known for being deadly at the mid-range and facilitating. And speaking of facilitating, Cade Cunningham, 3 turnovers in this one, and he did seem to have some untimely turnovers throughout the entirety of the series. You go all the way back to Game 3 when the Pistons were up 2-0 in the series. If they go up 3-0, then historically the series is over, right? No NBA team has ever come back down from a 3-0 deficit in a playoff series. And in Game 3, you had the tie game late with about 2.5 minutes left, and then 3 straight turnovers from Cade Cunningham. All of a sudden, the Cavs got that one win. They got some momentum in the series, and ultimately, it's led the Pistons to where they are now, which is out of the postseason. I know that's not necessarily the most fair thing to do, to put all of the happenings of the series on one bad sequence from Cade Cunningham, but when you are the star player, the face of the franchise, the guy who's no longer on a cheap rookie deal, he's getting paid like the star that he is, those kind of things are going to build up. And then conversely, right, had the Pistons have won Game 7, then Cade Cunningham maybe gets more credit than maybe he should. But regardless, I feel like you look at this series in general, and It's very frustrating the way that the Pistons seem to have they had the Cavs on the ropes and they just couldn't quite finish them off. And you got with the Cavs, they have players like Donovan Mitchell and James Harden and, you know, Jarrett Allen and Evan Mobley. That's their kind of their big core four that might be a little up and down. They might be a little bit inconsistent as far as playoff performances go. But when they're all going, or at least when three of them are going anyway. James Harden had a pretty rough game seven, which is par for the course from him. But the rest of them, Jarrett Allen especially, doing a good bit of damage in his 25 minutes. Donovan Mitchell leading the score with 26 points. And Mobley with 21 as well. Allen, Mobley, and Donovan Mitchell all reaching at least 20 points in that contest. There needs to be some kind of response from the best players on the Pistons. And there just really wasn't that. You had, I mean, even early on, they had to have Dennis Jenkins, who ended up being the lead point man for the Detroit Pistons. When Dennis Jenkins had to score the team's first 5 points and nobody else could seem to be hitting the broadside of a barn in terms of getting the ball to go in the hoop, that's when it became a little bit of that was a red flag for the Pistons from the opening get-go. And so some of the more off-season topics have to be addressed now, because for the Pistons, the off-season is now. Some of the questions that still linger, I mentioned to Jalen Duren, what do you do about his contract, and what do you do as far as trying to extend him? You also have the issue of, I think, J.B. Bickerstaff signed a contract extension after the first round for the Pistons, and I feel like his job security should still be fine. I feel like, you know, this was, even though, again, it feels awful coming off of this Game 7, this season was a step forward for the Pistons just in terms of the sheer productivity of them. The 60-win regular season proved that the year before was not a fluke in terms of the Pistons being a really solid playoff contender in the East. It feels like J.B. Bickerstaff and Trajan Langdon and their organization are set up to make the postseason for years to come now. But now it's just a matter of, will J.B. Bickerstaff and this coaching staff and this core, will they be able to break through that next step of getting, you know, in a legitimate deep playoff run? Because last year they made the playoffs, they lost to the Knicks. This year they get in the playoffs, they actually win some playoff games at home, they win a round against the Orlando Magic, maybe not in the most ideal way possible, but at the end of the day, they got the job done against Orlando in round one, and then they get to round two, look like they're going to be able to get the job done, and just kind of fall short, especially in game seven, where they were just flat as a can of pop that was opened 5 days ago that hasn't been touched, right? That was just completely lifeless game from the Pistons, especially in that second half where, you know, it seems like with both of these teams, we have seen both the Pistons and the Cavs have multi-digit leads getting into halftime, and then the other team able to rally and kind of flip the script on the game come the fourth quarter. The Pistons, unfortunately, not able to do that with this game seven. So ultimately, for the Pistons season, I think it was a step in the right direction, but was it as big of a step in the right direction as people would have thought? Maybe headed into the season, sure, but you have a 60-win, one-seed team. There's not even 60 teams in the NBA, but they had a 60-win, one-seed team, and they don't make it past the second round. That's going to be, I know J.B. Bickerstaff said he didn't want to use the word disappointing. In that context, it is a little bit disappointing, but I feel like the group overall should feel like they still took a little bit of a step forward, but there is some cleaning up they need to do. They really need to be assured that Jalen Duren can be that second option, and for the regular season, it looked like he proved that he could, and then the next 14 games of the playoffs came and kind of turned everything on its head, leaving more questions than answers as far as Jalen Duren is concerned. And J.B. Bickerstaff, he has yet to be past the second round in his coaching career. While he has done a very good job both in his previous job with Cleveland and here in Detroit of taking a team and a franchise and a culture that was just in the mud, right? Monty Williams was terrible for this Pistons organization. J.B. Bickerstaff comes in, and it's like an instant culture shift. Instant culture shift. That's great. And it's great that they're taking steps forward. But can J.B. Bickerstaff lead a team to have a real impact in the postseason? That is still to be determined. And I do think that next season is going to be make or break, not just for the head coach, but we also have to look at the front office. Are they willing to take a big swing? Are they willing to trade? You know, I think the time is now for the Pistons to start utilizing some draft picks, right? Start, you know, don't be afraid to make a big move, to make a core that is pretty good, but they need at least, I think, one more legitimate scoring option so that all the pressure isn't on Cade Cunningham. And if teams are locking him down, you're not looking to Tobias Harris or an underperforming Jalen Duren to kind of pick up the slack. I think one more option for the Pistons to really, again, take some pressure off of Cade Cunningham, who was dealing with a collapsed lung just a little bit ago in the season, just before the playoffs began. I'm not sure if that was ever fully healed because he was still playing with that little vest thing under his jersey. So, you know, Cade Cunningham on a still healing collapsed lung, if that's on him to be the only legitimate scoring threat, that's not going to, you know, lead to long-term success. You might get to the postseason. You might beat up on an 8 seed or a 7 seed here and there, but that's not a recipe for really getting to a conference final or an NBA finals in the slightest. Okay, I've been yapping about this for a bit too long. We'll take a break here on the show, and when we come back, the Tigers. I'm saying we're getting through the bad news first. We will have some good times. We'll have the some highlights from the Al Glick Classic, especially from the championship game. Connor Dockery, even though he is not on hosting the show today, his voice will bless the airwaves. That's coming up later on the Docket here with Luke Moorhead, filling in for Connor on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM.
Docket with Luke Moorhead. Weekdays at noon.
You can feel it. Summer. I feel like summer.
Welcome back to On the Docket. Luke Moorhead filling in for Connor Dockery this Monday afternoon. Connor out at the Jackson County Chamber of Commerce golf outing at the Jackson Country Club on a Monday afternoon. The Tigers, their tough early season continues. Full of injuries, which would be, you know, it would feel a little bit better if the Tigers could be able to get a couple of wins in the face of those injuries, but they're slowly but surely getting some guys back. Casey Mize recently returning. Tarek Skubal has had some, you know, somewhat positive updates on the loose body surgery he had to have, although with the way Scott Boras, his agent, kind of moves, I wonder how much of it is legitimate and how much of it is just Scott Boras kind of feeding things to insiders that make it sound better for his client, which I understand the agent works for the client, so that's his job to kind of make everything seem as good as possible. It's just like, yeah, apparently there was some kind of special surgery that it's fine for, you know, regular people have gotten and it's been approved, but like it's never been done on, you know, a high level pro athlete of the likes of Tarek Skubal. So there's always some kind of hesitancy there, but I guess there was some kind of, it involves like a smaller needle to get those loose bodies out of the elbow he was dealing with. So I guess the timeline for Tarek Skubal could be a lot more positive than the procedure that he has usually takes. But again, that's all kind of up in the air, and it's still not like he's going to be back with the Tigers like in the next few days or anything. There's still a long stretch of Tiger baseball to go before Tarek Skubal is going to be ready to take the mound, not just from recovering from that surgery, but just getting back into the full swing of things where, yeah, even if he doesn't have the longest timetable for return, he's going to have to get his arm back up to speed. He's going to have like kind of like a little mini spring training kind of, just to get back to 100% the full velocity that he needs to have for the Tigers as far as that goes. And the Tigers taking another loss to the Blue Jays yesterday. The final score was 4-1. It was Jack Flaherty on the mound, and yeah, it did not go well. Vlad Guerrero Jr. just in the top of the first, mashing a ball to left field, 369 feet for the first run of the game in favor of the Blue Jays. A wild pitch by Flaherty would send another runner in the first as well. So it's not like it was a good start that turned bad. It was a bad start that just kind of fizzled out from there. But with Flaherty on the mound, still on the top of the third. Yeah, just a lot of hits. Guerrero Jr. reaching on an infield single. Then he was drawn in from a run off a triple. And then a sack fly sent Varsho to home. And it was 4-0. Before it was the bottom of the third. And at that point, even though four runs isn't the most runs in the world to overcome. It just kind of feels like the Tigers are in a bit of a slump. And I hoped that something that I talked about on Saturday, I had really hoped that the Torkelson walk-off winner on Friday night would kind of turn into some positive winning momentum for the dugout. Even though they are injured, it showed that, hey, we can still pick up wins, especially against the Blue Jays team that isn't all that good themselves, and their road record isn't very good, and it was a series at Comerica Park. But the next, couple of games, they're proving otherwise, and all of a sudden, the Detroit Tigers' home record that was, at one point, it was like amazing. It was the one thing keeping the season alive. Like, okay, the Tigers are really, really good at home, whether it's a combination of injuries and just some uninspired play, especially from the offensive side of things. Although you see a pitcher give up, and have an error on defense, the Tigers' defense hasn't necessarily been all that sharp either. Maybe that's just a product of needing to call some guys up that you don't want to because of injuries, or leaning on some players you don't really want to lean on as much as you have to right now because of some of those injuries. But either way, the Tigers are kind of slipping, although they do have a chance here. This series with Cleveland, this four-game series that begins today, you can check the radio broadcast right here on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM. Let me grab the schedule here. That's going to begin later this evening, starting at around 6:15 for the pregame broadcast. 6:40 is the scheduled first pitch time. But yeah, you look at the AL Central standings. I mean, as long as they're close in the standings, AL Central matchups are going to be important regardless. But especially when right now you have an American League that just kind of stinks, right? Except for the Rays and the Yankees. A lot of teams are not very good. In fact, one of the teams that was above 500, the Athletics, just a couple days ago, they're now back down to 500. And they're 23-23. Right now, there are a total of four teams that are above 500 in the American League, like I just mentioned, the Rays and the Yankees, both having some pretty good seasons in the AL East. And then in the AL Central, it's Cleveland, who are four games above 500. That's fine. And the White Sox. How about the Chicago White Sox, who are 7-3 in their last 10? They are 24-22. So unfortunately, that means right now the Tigers, they are tied for the bottom of the AL Central with the Royals at 20-27. And they have this four-game series with Cleveland coming up. Right now, the Tigers are 5.5 back of the lead that the Guardians have on the AL Central. They're one game back of the Twins, and they are 3.5 games back of the White Sox. They're actually 4.5 games back of the Chicago White Sox. So the Tigers having some ground to make up. As far as who's getting the call today for Detroit, it is Framber Valdez. I think this is his first start since the suspension, I'm guessing, and hopefully he can get through the game, have a decent... Oh, wait, no, never mind. That's not his first start since the suspension. I don't believe he had a start against the Mets on the 13th, so my apologies on that. But, yeah, hopefully he can get through this contest, and he had a decent outing. It was in extra innings, a 3-2 loss the Tigers faced to the New York Mets back on the 13th. So for Valdez, if he can keep, if he's able to keep his emotions in check, more often than not, he's going to have a pretty good outing. That's why the Tigers, signed him to a 3-year deal with a lot of money attached to it. And the fact that sometimes he does kind of lose his temper and gets himself in predicaments like he got earlier on with the suspension, that is why it took him so long to be signed by any team. I guess a little bit of an improvement with the last time, at least he wasn't hitting his own teammate. He was hitting opposing players in this one. But Valdez getting the start for the Tigers. Slade to Ciccone getting the start for the Guardians, who have had a little bit of a topsy-turvy kind of season where a lot of their, usual suspects as far as their best performers at the plate go have been kind of having a bit of a down year. Jose Ramirez, not the kind of season you're used to having from him. Stephen Kwan, especially, with a fall off. I think he was demoted to sixth in the batting order after he was just their de facto leadoff hitter for years. Stephen Kwan seeing a bit of a demotion in the lineup as far as batting order goes. In fact, right now their leading player for batting average is Brian Rocchio, Again, not necessarily who to expect. And their home run leader right now is Angel Martinez. Cleveland also having a couple of younger bats that they brought up. Chase DeLauder, who leads the Guardians in RBIs at 28, tied for Dylan Dingler, who leads the Tigers with 28. And recently called up Travis Bazana as well. So it seems like Jose Ramirez and Stephen Kwan, at least so far up to this point in the season, have not been the dangerous ones. Usually when I see the Tigers playing Cleveland, I'm thinking, okay, just hold Kwan and Jose Ramirez, just hold them in check, and the rest of the game should go fairly smooth. But I guess Kwan and Ramirez have been held in check pretty much for most of the season. But the Tigers, they just need something to get going their way. Maybe there will be some angst in the dugout with the Cavs doing what they did to the Pistons last night. Maybe there's going to be a little bit of camaraderie between Detroit teams and Detroit teammates saying, hey, we got to get this one we got to avenge the Pistons with this 4-game series against the Cleveland Guardians. Because, man, if this series does not go well for Detroit, if they don't at least split and tread water in the AL Central in the standings here, then it's gonna become panic time. It kind of already is, where I feel like there's a lot of people ready to jump ship on the season already, and I kind of get that sentiment. I do want to wait to see some more of the regulars get back in the lineup, maybe some more pitchers get back healthy to see if there's still time to, you know, salvage something of the season. Because I think, you know, we all remember last year where it looked like the Tigers were going to, very clearly and very easily win the AL Central. That did not end up happening. And then the year before that, it seemed like at the trade deadline, right, the Tigers, they traded Jack Flaherty to the Dodgers. It seemed like, okay, they were kind of punting for next season. They end up making a miraculous run to the postseason and winning a series as well. So I'm not necessarily saying it's over, but I'm just saying that, you know, if things don't start to change sooner rather than later, you know, it's going to get a lot closer to over earlier in the season than I think anybody would have wanted and really anybody would have expected for the Tigers. I mean, they've lost 8 of their last 10 games. That has to turn around sometime soon. And again, there's no better time for the Tigers to turn that around than beginning tonight against Cleveland, who leads the AL Central. They got to start climbing up the ranks of the standings at some point in the season if they want to try to make a run at this thing. So elsewhere in the league, in the AL East, like I mentioned, the Rays, they have a 3-game cushion over the Yankees. The Yankees probably thinking, man, if we were in any other AL division, we'd be sitting pretty. But nope, the Rays, 3 games up on the Yankees in the AL East, followed by the Blue Jays, Orioles, and Red Sox in a very distant 3rd, 4th, and 5th place. Like I mentioned, the AL Central, it's Cleveland, 1 game up over the Chicago White Sox, and the Twins are in 3rd, and then the Tigers and Royals tied for last in the division. Then in the AL West, it is the A's, a .500 record, getting them 1st place in the AL West. They're 1 game up on the Rangers, 2 games up on the Mariners, and then the Astros and Angels in 4th and 5th. Bit distantly. Looking our way over to the National League East, it is the Braves with an impressive 32-15 record. That is currently the best record in baseball. They are 8 games up on the Phillies, 9 games up on the Nationals, and then you have the Marlins and the Mets. Ooh, the Mets having a tough season. In the NL Central, the Cubs, 29-18. They're up 1.5 on both the Brewers and the Cardinals. So the NL Central has been fairly competitive there. 5 games up on the Pirates and the Reds. So all of those teams in the NL Central above .500. So I guess early contender for best division in baseball right now. And then the NL West, man, the Dodgers. I don't like them being on top of the NL West. The Dodgers, they're 0.5 game up on the Padres. Their only hope of the Dodgers not being a first place team. You have the Diamondbacks, 6 games back of them, and then the Giants and the Colorado Rockies having a bad as expected season. They are 18-29. I believe that is good. Let me just check that. That is actually not good for worst record in baseball. They're beaten out by the Angels, who are 16-31. So the Tigers, not the only team right now in some baseball misery, but you know, those miserable teams were expected to be miserable. The fact that the Tigers are this bad right now when they're not really supposed to be, that's the disappointing thing. But we're going to take a break here on the show, and when we come back, we're going to recap some of the Al Glick baseball classics for some Jackson area baseball and softball that took place this past weekend, and we'll round out the show at the end of the hour. That's coming up on the docket with Luke Moorhead here on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM.
On the Docket with Luke Moorhead. Weekdays at noon.
Welcome back to On the Docket. Luke Moorhead, the second, filling in for Connor Dockery this Monday afternoon. He's doing some golfing with Captain Steve at the Jackson County Chamber Golf Outing at the Jackson Country Club. The show is brought to you by Knutson's Sporting Goods, Bellinote Ristorante, Bud Light, Tri-County Water, and also Kettle Bell Hotspot, where your functional fitness begins. Their expert coach is a Team USA kettlebell sports lifting representative with over 20 years of experience. They know what they're doing over there. You can build raw functional strength and core stability, improve cardiovascular endurance and metabolic conditioning. You can, with a well-structured kettlebell workout, can burn calories at the same pace as a six-minute mile, up to 20 calories per minute. It enhances your mobility, balance, and coordination. So you can join the team today at Kettlebell Hotspot in Spring Arbor, where your functional fitness begins. This past weekend over on WKHM, Jackson's News Talk, 970 AM, 101.5 FM, we had live coverage of the Al Glick Classic, at least the baseball side of things for the Al Glick Classic. And we saw that Jackson High defeating Jonesville. Then in the second round, we covered Jay High and their game against Columbia Central, where Columbia Central just pounced all over Jackson High. The Golden Eagles with a dominant 21-0 win to advance themselves to the championship contest against Lumen Christi. The Titans, they won the Al Glick Classic last year with a thrilling come-from-behind victory against Onsted. I know it was close at the very least. I'm pretty sure it was come-from-behind, but I'm forgetting the exact details, a little hazy. But in this contest, things got going with Columbia Central getting on the board first. Chase Ducate with an RBI to make it 1-0.
1-0 count. Second pitch, Tapper. That's going to take a huge bounce over the third baseman, Paul Sattler. No play to be made. And just like that, two batters in, it's 1-0 Columbia.
That was in the first. Wes learned for the Titans, though, he would have an answer to even the game at one.
First base runner for Lumen this game. Pitch swing and a line drive. Base hit into right field. That's going to score the tying run. He turns heads to second. Throw back in will hold him there. It's a stand-up one-run double for Wes Learned on a single pitch. We're tied at one.
1-1 was the score. Headed into the top of the third. Columbia Central would get a couple runs across, make it 3-1. And then Camden Ducate with a two-run RBI for Columbia Central to take a commanding 5-1 lead.
Pitch, line drive, base hit into center field. Two more runs score. And the Columbia lead, just like that, is doubled from 2-4. Two-run single from Camden Ducate. 5-1 Columbia.
But then in the bottom of the third, Lumen Christi would get to work, cutting into that lead, Paul Sattler, with a two-run hit of his own.
1-2. Swing grounder. That one gets just past the first baseman, Hayden Haynes. One Lumen run's going to score. They're going to send the other one. Relay throw to home. That's going to gun him. No, he didn't get the tag in. Wow. What a slide in by Benny Gaston. Meanwhile, Paul Sattler is going to move up all the way to second.
And so that made it 5-3. As the game went on, Columbia Central would build a 7-3 lead, but Lumen Christi would slowly but surely bite into it. And then in the bottom of the seventh, they're down one. Is there going to be a hero to send this to extra innings? It was Wes Learned for Lumen Christi in the bottom of the seventh.
You're in the bottom of the seventh, first pitch, swing, line drive. This one's high, this one's deep, this one is gone! We're tied. Wes Learned. A single swing, and now one out, bases empty.
One out, bases empty. Columbia Central would get out of the inning with the game still intact. So no walk-off for Lumen Christie in the bottom of the seventh. And that would come back to bite them in the top of the eighth. The Golden Eagles offense getting back to work, including this Chase Duquette sack fly to give the Golden Eagles a lead once again.
Next one, swing, line drive. This one is center field, and this is going to be caught by Fitzpatrick, but the courtesy runner will come in to score. Sacrifice fly and an RBI for Chase Duquette. Now it's 8-7 Columbia.
Then later on in the inning, a guy who was he had his hands all over this game, Hayden Haynes, with a two-run double. 10-7. This would end up being the couple winning RBIs here. Hayden Haynes.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a tapper. This one up the middle and not going to be ran down perfectly between the defenders. Two runs will score. And moving up to second on the throwback in for Haynes, a two-run double. Lead grows 10-7.
They would add one more to that lead before the end of the top of the eighth. Bottom of the eighth, Lumen Christie did a decent job of trying to cut into that lead, but it just would not be enough. 11-9, the final score. Here is the final call. Again, Connor Dockery, his voice will be on the show, you know, blessing the airwaves, if you will, even when he's out golfing at the Chamber golf outing. 11-9, the final score. Here's the final call of Columbia Central winning the Al Glick Baseball Classic.
But Wes learned again, he was the hero to send this to extras. Can he be the hero again? With a tying run now on second. Called strike three, and it's over. Columbia Central able to gut out a extra innings win, 11-9, over Lumen Christie, and they are the 2026 Al Glick champions.
I think that would also hold true for the softball side of things for the Al Glick Classic. Columbia Central taking down Jonesville 10-1. I believe in the championship game it was Quincy. They took down 16-0. So double champs on the day. Columbia Central, the baseball and softball teams. And we've covered the Al Glick Classic the past few years here on, well, not on this station, but with the McKibben Media Group network of stations have had the Al Glick Classic the past few years now over on WKHM. And we will have continued playoff baseball coverage on WKHM that begins a week after tomorrow, the day after Memorial Day. High school playoff baseball in Michigan begins, and obviously that means in here in the Jackson area as well. And we're certainly, I think we're going to, Columbia Central and Lumen Christie are in the same district, and seeing how that game went to extras for the Al Glick Classic Championship, there are some other Jackson teams in the area that might have something to say about it, but I think that would be a very, very interesting potential rematch for a district title for some postseason baseball. Again, that's going to begin not tomorrow, but the week after tomorrow. So it'll be a good time. We like to pick up some high school baseball in the postseason. Hopefully, you get a good run. I remember Lumen Christie; they had a long run in the playoffs, got runner up, and then I believe it was last season we hitched to the Grass Lake Lady Warriors softball bandwagon, and that bandwagon got us all the way to a state championship, the first ever, I believe, in Grass Lake softball history. So something like that is always in the cards here for when we have our broadcasts of playoff baseball and playoff softball as well, if applicable. If there's teams in the Jackson area that are going to make a deep postseason run, we're going to do what we can to make sure that they get put onto the air. We're going to take one more final break here on the show. We will come back. We will wrap up on the docket. Connor will be back here tomorrow in his normal seat. But for now, we're going to take a break here on the show. And we'll come back on the docket with Luke Moorhead filling in for Connor here on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM.
On the docket with Luke Moorhead. Weekdays at noon.
And welcome back to On the Docket. Luke Moorhead filling in for Connor Dockery today for the next few minutes. Just want to let you know the show brought to you by Knutson's Outdoor, Knutson's Sporting Goods, your outdoor convenience store, Kettlebell Hotspot, Bellinote Ristorante, Bud Light, Tri-County Water, and also our friends at Pauly's Country Markets, where you can get their, sign up for their My Rewards program. It's simple. You just ask the cashier, hey, I want to sign up for the My Rewards program. They have a lot of good deals. Even if you don't have the My Rewards program, they have a lot of good stuff. You can check out all that they have for sale on their ad at country-markets.com. There's a weekly ad and just all the information that you can hope to ever find about Pauly's Country Market. That, again, that is on country-markets.com. So some bad news for some Detroit teams this past week. Obviously, the Tigers not playing all that well. The Pistons eliminated from the postseason. But there is one team in Michigan still playing for some for their playoff lives, and that is the Grand Rapids Griffins, the AHL affiliate of the Detroit Red Wings. And right now, the current place of Jackson native Carter Mazur. And right now, the Griffins, they are their season is hanging on a thread right now. They are down 0-2 in a best-of-five series against the Chicago Wolves, and both of those losses came at home. So now the Griffins will have to win two games on the road to try to hopefully force a Game 5 winner-take-all on Saturday. But their next contest is tomorrow, beginning at 7 o'clock, and that is in Chicago. A little bit of an interesting kind of story here is that long time thought to be goaltender of the future for the Red Wings, Sebastian Kosa, right now he has been riding the bench for the hotter goaltender in Michael Postava, who the Red Wings just kind of signed from the Czech League. So Sebastian Kosa, he was a first round draft pick, I believe. The Red Wings traded up to draft him, I believe in 2021 or 2020. It was a while ago now. So Kosa having a lot of draft capital that Postava just doesn't have. But, you know, when you're coaching an AHL team, you're not necessarily going on, well, what is the who was drafted first, who has draft capital? You're going with the hotter goaltender right now. It has been Postava, although I wonder with their backs against the wall, with their most recent loss being a 4-3 loss in overtime, I do wonder if it's like, hey, Sebastian Kosa, it's your time to go. We're down 0-2. We might as well try to throw something out there. And I do feel like ultimately I've heard a lot of chatter about, well, he's going to become a trade piece this offseason. Maybe he will if it leads to something that truly upgrades the Red Wings in other areas, like another top six forward or a legitimately good defenseman. But I feel like as far as if that does not happen, you don't necessarily want to trade a goaltending prospect just because. I feel like with John Gibson having 1 year left on his contract and Cam Talbot now being out of, he's going to be a free agent. I don't think the Red Wings going to re-sign him. I think you have a fairly obvious and decent scenario of John Gibson being your solid veteran starting goaltender and Sebastian Kosa being the backup who's just getting kind of his feet wet in the NHL, seeing what he has. And if he doesn't have much, then maybe you can do away with him or trade him or do whatever. But I feel like people are kind of jumping the gun on you have to trade Kosa now. I feel like it's just kind of let's wait and see how Sebastian Kosa looks in the NHL, which I believe will happen next season before we get to moving on from the goaltending prospect. That's going to do it for me here on the show. I've been Luke Moore II. I will continue to be Luke Moore II. Connor Dockery comes back to his normal spot here tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in to On the Docket here on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM. We got The Herd coming up next.